Blog Talk Radio.
Rocky's money. He was all over the country, you know? So,
Rich, you still have a trivia question for me?
Yes, I do. Make sure you know this, being the boxing rain man that you are. But what is Jersey Joe Walcott's real name? Well, middle name. Gotta get the middle name.
Back to stuff. It seems like the whole country is recognizing.
well as, of course, later heavyweight that had just as much hype behind him when he was coming up, Mike Tyson, the one heavyweight that people were thinking about in the last few months, documentary and everything. It's nice to see Rocky coming back and take those minds, because he was a better role model, I think, than Mike Ross.
Absolutely.
Even though when Mike started out, I would say he was a great role model, because he was, you know, straight and narrow. Talking about suicide, it was part of one of the articles that I wrote some of the commentary on. Somebody had mentioned that Tyson actually tried to commit suicide twice, and I never heard that story.
Yeah, I remember one time he was involved in a car accident. He was still champion of the world back in 1988 and 1989. And he was doing it intentionally, the way he tried to commit suicide. And that was before Buster Douglas, and that was before he had the race conviction. Excuse me. And Roots to answer your question, Arnold Cream, boxing editor of the Virtual Champion of Barbados by the name of Joe Walcott. And Arnold Cream, from New Jersey.
Patricia is from Oregon, where they just had a big UFC event out there. She's going all the way to Florida, so that's going to be a big adventure for her. Rabble Rouser, Rich Bergeron.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good. We're live here on the air. We've got Tony Pinnacle here too, the boxing guy.
He's gonna
be asking you
questions. Hey, how are you doing? Good.
You excited about this big trip you're gonna be making down to Florida?
Yeah. It's gonna be interesting.
What can you tell us about how you got picked and how this all came about?
My husband, he put up a MySpace page for my fighting, the Little Patricia page, and executive producer Penny Buffington, she just contacted me through that, and we went through all the hoops with the contracts and finding out what band I'm supposed to be at, and pretty much
just
gone about from there.
All right. So tell us a little bit about your fight experience so far.
I do MMA, and I'm currently the featherweight champion in the Southern Oregon area. I hold the 145-pound belt. I'm 2-0, and I'm getting ready to go to Florida to be on the Ultimate Women's Challenge.
What do you think about the caliber of girls you're going down there with? You're obviously going to be fighting against at some point, right?
Oh, definitely. I know of most of them. I watch many of their fights. It should be a nice challenge, but I think I'll be fine.
And I know I saw a clip of your interview there on the fishing trip, and You said you trained with your boyfriend, so you know, you're used to fighting a man all the time?
He's my husband now, and yeah, he's my coach, and I wouldn't have any of my skills without him.
Right.
Yeah, so I roll with guys. I've got one other girl that I roll with now, and she's 170 pounds.
Okay.
So I'm the smallest one on the team, and I roll and get grounded down with everybody. I think it should make those girls feel light as a feather when I'm fighting them, trying to pick them up and slam them down.
Yeah, I know she got some big biceps.
Yeah, I work out every day, so.
I saw the,
I did.
You did the ring push-ups, you know, the Olympic rings push-ups on those. Wow, that's going to work.
Yeah.
kind of a step up from my perfect push-up pads.
We have those, too.
Yeah.
I do strength training four days a week, about anywhere between 3 to 4 hours a day, and then I train 6 days a week. I try to take a night off every once in a while. Not very often now.
And what's the scene like out there in Oregon? I know didn't they just have a UFC event out there?
Yeah, they had one up in Portland. But it's growing here. There's been a lot of really good fighters that have came out of the town that I'm from. I'm from Medford, Oregon. And, we have one promoter, now there's another one here, so there's a lot of more venues than there was about a year ago. It's growing, and it's growing a lot more for women, too, which is nice, because it's nice to see other girls get out there and show their toughness, too.
Now, who's the biggest name you've fought so far?
I fought both times in one of the local promoter shows, and he has a fight team, and I fought his girl. The girl I fought last, her name was Rose Carrillo, and she was the title fight that I fought, and she was a nice, challenging fight. It was the title fight highlights on my MySpace page. We have a team here. It's called Team Zadonic. We're small right now, but we're growing. There's a lot of people that want to come train with us. We just need to find a bigger place.
Where do you train now?
I'm at our house.
Uh-huh.
Our house.
Yeah,
our house. We've got a living room with two big weight machines in it, and then our dining room is full of mats. So that's our place.
So you live, eat, and sleep in MMA.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, I'm just curious, what got you into boxing or mixed martial arts in the first place?
I always loved everything about fighting, but my husband now, he was my boyfriend before, he's the one that actually got me all into it. He noticed that I had halfway decent skills when we started working and found out that I was pretty good. So if it wasn't safe, I wouldn't have any of this right now, because he's the one that taught me everything, and he encourages me and supports me, and we've got a nice little family together. We don't have any kids together, but we have three all together between the both of us. They keep us busy too.
Why haven't we seen him on The Ultimate Fighter? He must be pretty good right now if he's working with you, right?
he's our coach, so he sticks with that right now.
Yeah. He doesn't have his own career going?
He has full time as well. So that's why we aren't able to bring in more people.
Yeah, it's always tough.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of debate recently too about how there's a big disparity between what boxers are getting paid and what MMA fighters are getting paid too. So it's tougher for MMA guys to train, girls to train without sponsorships and all that stuff in addition to their fight paychecks. Whereas
definitely.
A lot of boxers can get good fights under their belt and they're making $5,000-$6,000 a fight. I know from the local circuit here, most you can get like $600 to $800. And you know, that's as a young fighter. The top billed guy might get a few thousand.
Yeah, it needs to grow a little bit more with that. There's so much good talent out there and a lot of people aren't willing to pay for it. It just depends on the venue, what sponsors the venue has. Them to be able to pay you what you need or want. Around here, I live in a smaller town, so I don't have to even go very far to fight. And when you're amateur in Oregon, you can only be paid for travel expense. So they usually don't get much of anything. And when you're pro, it's better to go out of town to fight because they do pay you more out of town. Yeah, we have sponsors. We have some team sponsors, and we're always looking for more sponsors all the time.
Yeah, well, I'm sure the buzz about you being on the show, people would love to start contributing now, the more they hear about it.
Yeah.
And I noticed on the preview they have Boss Gruden, and I couldn't think of the model name. Go figure, I should know. But
yeah.
There was a supermodel on the video, and then Boss Gruden.
Yeah,
so that's...
And I think that model girl is, too. I don't
have to name either. All right. Well, you don't have to fight her, so you don't have to name.
True.
But, Boss Rutan is going to be a laugh riot, I'm sure. He's always great when he does the announcing. And, you know, on Inside MMA, in a few episodes I've watched, he's always got a joke or two. Makes you crack up. And, you know, he's got some great fight skills himself to fall back on to describe what's going on. So that's nice that you guys have that voice behind you in this whole thing.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, they just have a nice list of coaches that are going to be on the show, too. So I'm going to be excited to work with them.
And I'm sure you must have watched the big Gina Carano fight against Cyborg.
Yes, I did.
What did you think?
I thought it was pretty good. I think the Cyborg did a great job.
Right.
Yeah, and I can't wait to work out with her. So, she's supposed to be on the show.
Really? Oh, that'd be interesting. Just don't let her demonstrate a rear naked choke on you like that reporter.
I watched that, too. That was funny.
You're pretty good to go out there. You don't want to fight her on the inside.
No.
Yeah,
I'd like to learn some stuff from her, though. She's a very skilled fighter.
It's always a funny reaction to see somebody wake up to one of those, too. You're not supposed to really laugh when somebody's down and out in a fight. But, you know, some of the fights, the big fights on TV lately have ended like that, where guys get choked out and boom, they spaz it out and feel the mad, or they just take the ref down. Kind of funny. Looking ahead, who's the one girl on the show that you either most want to fight or most don't want to fight?
I don't want to fight any of those girls. I don't know. That's a very good question. They're all very well-skilled girls. I'm just excited to get down there and get to fight any of them. I know Julie Kessy, she's got a pretty good record. She's had a lot of experience in the cage. She used to be a nice challenge.
Would you like to make $5,000 a month posting a link on Google?
Search.
Get paid $5 to $30 for every website you post on Google. No one needs to buy
Always.
Anything.
Always. Yeah. Check out your opponents. They see where they're lacking. and you take advantage of that. I mean, the sport, it's a predetermined fight, so it's not like something that you're just jumping into. You know that's going to happen, and you prepare for it.
Now, what can you tell us about how the show is going to be set up? Do you have any idea yet, or is it all just going to be a surprise when you get there?
Well, I know that we're going to Florida, and we're going to, there's going to be 16 of us girls in a house. There's two weight classes, 125 and 135. I know we're going to have some weekly challenges, trying to raise money for charity, which is really cool. I like that. There's going to be training and fighting. I'm not sure what order it all goes in, but that pretty much is the whole show. They pretty much kept everything secret from us, but I'm assuming that we're fighting for a contract with a major promoter. I'm excited. I want to go there. I've gone up and down in weight for them. When I first got a call to me, they said, we want you at 125. I'm like, I'll make that weight. And I just got done with my title fight at 145. So I cut weight and cut, and all the way down to 125. And that morning when I stepped on the scale and I weighed my weight, that one of the producers called and said, oh, well, we're going to have you fighting at 135 instead. So, I'm like, okay, well, at least I can eat now, so this is cool.
Rich and I were talking about that very day, that cutting weight, that bumping up in weight, just before we got on the interview with you.
Yeah, it's hard to do if you have to do it in a short amount of time, but I had time to cut it, and now I've had time to gain it back in a good way, so it's nice.
And I couldn't even imagine myself doing it 35 times. I was telling Tony, I broke 190 today, and I was thrilled. I'm just trying to get down to 175 to go back into boxing myself. Tony and I actually met each other, or didn't meet each other. We were supposed to meet in a boxing match way back in 1998 when I had my only semester of college boxing down at Virginia Military Institute, and we were both in the 185-pound division. So we actually kind of met up on MySpace. Funny that you started on MySpace there, because that's where we started Fight News Unlimited.
That's cool.
You know, we found each other later on. So, and then Tony told me about one time he was scratched in to fight me, and for some reason the opponents changed at the last minute or something. And so we always joke about one day.
Time we were set up to fight each other was at the Lockheed Invitational last year, and I think Bruce actually pulled you off the car, and that's when they put Jordan in fight me instead. Just talking about the cutting weight short period of time, the year before that, I was almost naturally around between 175 and 180, and our head coach, Dr. Cox, well known in the Pennsylvania area, you've got to keep his own. One of the assistant managers for the 96 Olympic boxing team. So he's heard well known throughout the world. And we're going to a fight that year. And I was bitching because he kept making me fight too heavy. He had me fight heavyweights. And I'm like, Doc, I said, I'm naturally 180 pounds. I said, like, he can fight these big guys. I said, I'm stepping on the scale with props in my pockets trying to make the weight. And these guys are just too big for me. And I guess he got so tired of me bitching and moaning about fighting too heavy. Then for the regionals, we're getting ready, it's Monday, and I'm second in the 180 weight class. He goes, Chandler's opening at 165. You think you can make that by Friday? And I said, let's do it. And talk about killing yourself for a win. That was 15 pounds in about less than 3 days. I pulled it off. I don't know how. But I mean, not only the day, I mean, I was just done. And when I was telling Rich, that when I lost in the regionals and the Columbia Nationals at 172, man, I felt like I was on air. So, 172, I could do that standing on my head. But I'm the only guy, actually, in college boxing history, and I don't think anybody's done this since I left about 10 or 6 years ago, but I boxed in 5 great classes in the matter of 3 months. From January.
Wow. That's crazy. Tony, you there? Alicia? Hello? Are you still there, Patricia? A strong girl. Yeah, my internet went out. No, it wasn't you. It was the internet went out, and I was trying for the life of me to figure out what it was, and then all I did was screw in the cable in the back of the router, and it worked. All right.
Which is our technical expert, which kind of scares me sometimes.
my phone, the usual problem with my phone, I use the Skype system, and the usual problem is that it'll, you know, start breaking up out of nowhere because, like, it has, like, a certain capacity. It only works for, like, 3 phone calls, and then it goes funky until I reset the computer. So it always happens, like, right before the show. I'm getting Tony on the line. He gets, like, 1 word out, and I'm like, oh, I gotta reset. Yeah. But we were talking about cutting weight, I guess, before we got cut off.
Yeah.
I had a couple of horror stories I wanted to mention. Wrestling back in high school. And that's actually one of the reasons why, we at Fitness Unlimited are very big on, you know, women and fighting, is because I saw this girl who actually wrestled for horror. And she was the first girl to wrestle a match in Massachusetts, for wrestling, period, in the state. And she wrestled on our high school team and actually tried to recruit a couple more girls to join us, but none of them ever hung in but her. And she spent the whole time wrestling all guys, all the time. And I still remember forever the first kid that lost to her. And, the griefing was already taken to practice. It just got tenfold when she beat her. And I only had to wrestle her like once or twice because I was much heavier. She always tried very hard, and actually she kept in touch with my sister. I still talk to her every now and then today, and I saw her last year at my sister's wedding, so she still got the big biceps, and she's still a strong girl, and just her resiliency just really stood the test of time, and to go to Harvard and then become a wrestler at Harvard, too, that was just unbelievable. So it's always good to know that I saw her when she started. And once I started Fighting These Unlimited, I looked for stories like that. And one of the biggest stories I worked on at the beginning was this female heavyweight boxer named Tansy Daniel, who just couldn't get a fight. And then I wrote the story about her, and she got this fight, and I get to see it. And it was great. Now that mixed martial arts has come along, And especially the first, because the first fight that I ever saw in mixed martial arts was on Showtime. It was one of the Elite XC fights. And I couldn't believe the fight that the girls put on. I think it was actually Julie Kempty versus Gina Carano. Because I had just got into mixed martial arts a couple of years ago. I didn't really start out interested. But back when I wrestled, we had a situation my senior year where the kid at 171 was a freshman and he was no good. And I had beat the captain at 160 in a wrestle-off, but you know, the coach needed somebody to bump up to 171. So I always had some interesting experiences doing that. When I started wrestling, I had to cut a pound and a half in 15 minutes one time and did it. But that was my all-time record for losing weight. But fortunately, I guess, after that, I had to actually gain weight most times or just stay where I was. And I was about 165, wrestling the whole year, 171, and actually ended up getting like sixth place in the sectionals. And the kid who won at 160 was a kid I had beat who bumped up to 171. So I was pissed, you know, because I had three of the worst fights I've ever had to get that sixth place. My tooth was coming out after one of them. And I had actually I had snapped on the kid and hit him in the face. The second fight, we both got points taken away, because the reason I hit him in the face was he kind of swept through and chopped the arm and hit me right in the nuts. And he had done that before in our fights before. So I was pissed. And he just got grabbed and went ahead and hit him in the face. But the one story that I always remember, I'll never forget, I was supposed to make the programs for the fight, for the wrestling meet. One night that we were having at home, and I get this call. All of a sudden, I fell asleep in the afternoon, and I get the call from the coach. You gotta get down here. We gotta make these programs, right? So I spent like an hour and a half making these programs, and that was the high school's newspaper editor too at the time. And so the coach tells me after I make the programs, oh, you gotta be at 189. You might have to bump up against this kid who was you know, six-time state champion. I was like, what? How? What do you mean, make 189? He goes, you're going to have to gain weight. And I said, what? He said, you're going to have to gain a few pounds, you know, drink a couple gallons of water or something. So he made me drink 2 gallons of water before I get on the scale. And this is like right before I got on the scale. So I make the weight for 189, puke all the water up instantly. And then I get out, and chances are, boom, they pump me up to 189. And, you know, I'm naturally 165 pounds. Fighting against a multiple-time state champ, and they go to me, just stay off your back, don't get pinned. You know, that's the last thing we can afford right now, because it was a tight match. And I was like, yeah, right. I go out there, and I was surprised I lasted 40 seconds or so, but I got pinned. He wrapped me up in some kind of pretzel I'd never seen before. No way.
Oh, yeah.
You know, once you're in there with somebody who outweighs, especially in wrestling, whether it's their object is to pretty much get you on your back and sit on you.
Yeah.
It's horrible. But, you know, it gives you stories like that to tell later on. We had another kid on that team that was like 96 pounds, literally, and he had to make weight for 106, and he used to wear a master lock in his underwear.
And then my second fight was my title fight, and I took it at 145, but I only made it to 141. And the Boston Commission allowed me to still fight, even though she was 145. And, I'm always against somebody that's bigger than me, it seems like. They're always taller than me, not short, but.
Well, you can always make up for that with a little bit of movement and good striking.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I do lots and lots of stand-up drills to teach me how to get into the pocket and be in there for and then jump back out. So you got to work with my height here, so I've been learning to do that the last year.
Now, do you have a favorite submission move or strike that you like to use?
Oh, I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
Do you have a favorite submission move or punch or strike that you like to use, one or the other?
No. It depends, I guess, on what position I'm in. I really like taking people down. I can pick somebody up and slam them down pretty hard. It's not something you usually see a girl do, especially a girl my size, but I love doing that and it's fun.
Well, yeah, you know, it's always the thing that gets the most cheers, I think, too, at fights when somebody gets picked up and just the crowd always goes wild. You know, the only other thing that gets that much excitement out of people is when there's a good stand-up war going on. But, you know, I've been to a lot of local fights, and that's really what gets the crowd going. So somebody can, they can feel it when somebody gets slammed. The whole ring shakes and the cage shakes.
Yeah, definitely.
It's one thing that boxing doesn't have, unfortunately. Tony would say fortunately.
Yeah.
I don't know, do you have anybody you want to give a shout out to or say hello to?
Yeah, I'd love to say hello to all my family and friends. Maybe say hi to my sponsors. Got, well, my team, of course, Team Denai. Fat Cat Tattoo. We've got Christian's Downtown Pharmacy. Evan's Pest Control. Jackson Creek Pizza. Downtown Grounds Coffee. And Revolution Salon. They're all so awesome. They treat us wonderfully. They're just all of our local sponsors here in town. I want to thank my coach and my husband for all the time and effort that he's put into me. And thank you, Rich, for having me on the show.
You're welcome. Anytime. We scouted you for a reason, because we know you're going to win the show. So.
Yeah. That's what I'm going there for.
Just need you to promise to come back on when you do.
I will, definitely. I will always do that.
Yeah, it's you know, it's one of our causes that we like to champion, because you know, there's a whole lot of issues in mixed martial arts and boxing to talk about, but I think the one that stands above the rest is you know, fair treatment of women and men in the sport. You know, Gina Carano has been a pioneer, and that big fight between her and Cyborg really set the stage for, I think, is going to be a big... It's even more impressive in mixed martial arts, I think, than boxing, how women are coming out of the woodwork and just showing that they can do just as well as a man any day of the week, even better sometimes.
I agree. They set the bar for us, and it's nice to be able to go out there and be treated equally, as in... the time in our rounds. I mean, everything. We can fight 5 minute rounds just like them. Not a problem.
Right. And I actually saw a fight here in Massachusetts that was better than any female fight I've ever seen on TV at a local event here. And I got the feeling watching it that those girls in there weren't just fighting to get the win. You know, they were fighting for all of womankind.
Yeah, exactly.
They wanted
I
to
want
represent.
To not be taboo anymore. I want women to get out there and be able to fight along with the guys and not feel like it is taboo. This is 2010 almost. We should be able to do everything those guys do and better, just like you said.
Well, it's been great having you on. We wish you the best of luck on the show. Do you know when it's going to air, or...
Yes, I found out the exact air date today. It will be December 28th. So check your local listings and see us on there.
All right. Just when we get done watching Kimbo on The Ultimate Fighter, we'll be ready to see the women do one better, right?
Awesome.
Great having you, and we'll be in touch. Definitely. Keep us posted.
All right, sounds great. I do have another girl that you might want to interview. She's younger. She's 14, but she is an awesome Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu girl, and she's been doing Muay Thai for a few years, too, and she's going to be an up-and-coming girl in MMA. If you want me to, do you want me to maybe message you her information? Or,
sure.
Name, we have Kimberly Smith, if you want to add her name onto my list of people I want to say hi to. It's Kimberly Smith. She's the CrossFit killer. And she is a pretty kick-ass little girl. So, little lady, I mean. Okay, thank you so much, Rich.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Yeah, not a problem, and I will be paying attention to you.
Okay, good luck on the show. I know you're not going to need it, but I got to say it anyway.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
All right, have a good night.
All right, you too. Bye-bye.
Okay, Tony, so it's boxing time, I guess. Are you happy?
Awesome. Oh, that's great. Well, which first of all, But one thing, I forgot to email you back last week, and I wanted to answer one of your questions that you asked regarding the fight on Friday night, during the Bailey fight.
Right.
And you said, Bailey made a huge strategical error in that fight. And I said, from the first round on, that is the right.
My observation was that it had nothing to do with footwork. I mean, Bailey could have come in there with any footwork, and with the right strategy, he still could have won, whatever direction he was moving. And the problem was, he was always picking up his back leg, and he always had his left hand low, kind of like the Cunningham-Adamek fight. You know, he put on a great fight up until he got knocked out, but he shouldn't have kept his hand low the whole time. I know that might be his style because he's got the big right, but you can see by the end of the fight, what was the biggest swollen piece of his face? It was his eye, where he had his left hand down by his hip. You don't fight a guy that's always blocking with one hand low. You just don't do it. And if you're going to do it, if you can get away with it, you've got to have a lot of lateral movement. You got to be able to sway back on your hips. And Bailey was not doing that. He was way out of his league. He was moving around like he didn't know how to box at all. You know, and he was picking up his back right foot every time he tried to throw that big punch.
Rich, if you remember from last week's show, we were talking about this fight, and you know, you knew the folks going to be saying, and the one thing I said was, Bailey, for as great of a puncher as he is, and you saw what he did to our boy Gato, he's not a very durable fighter. That's your part of the thing on him. You knew Juan Durango was very durable. And in fact, Durango got up from that one right here, and I believe it was like the sixth round, which they had talked about, because the guy's toughness.
Almost like it didn't even hurt him. It just knocked him off balance, it seems. You know, but you see,
believe me, he barely got up to the count of 10.
Right.
You just see guys,
he got up as soon as possible. And, you know, even as he was getting to from his back to his ass, you could see the eye opening up. And starting to bleed, you know, and it was like the blood's on his face. Now he realized he's got to get up, you know.
Right.
It was amazing to see him get off the canvas.
But a major technical mistake that Bailey did was when you're fighting a southpaw, and if you move to your right, you're moving into his power shot, you're moving into his left. That's why they teach you to move. And another reason, and you'll see this in anybody who subscribes to Ring Magazine, Bernard Hopkins did a tutorial on one of his little articles. He does an article every month on a different technical thing about boxing, and one of his was what to do against the southpaw. And the thing he says is, like, move to your left, because what you want to do is get your outside foot, which if you're a right-handed fighter, is your left foot, outside of his lead foot, which would be his right foot. That gives you a straight punch to throw your straight right hand, where they can't reach you with their straight line, and gives you a chance to land your left hook.
It's interesting, too, that Urango wasn't a southpaw originally.
Wait, Urango was a southpaw? Sure he was.
No, he's naturally right-handed.
He's naturally right-handed.
He decided to fight as a southpaw.
Right.
So he doesn't...
He had a lot of power in his straight left.
Right.
Bailey was not using the right angles. No matter if the guy is right-handed fighting in a left-handed stance or not, the fact is you've got to use the right angle. And it reminds me of back when we were talking about the 1998 Nationals. Remember those were aired on ESPN, as we always talk about?
Yeah.
A friend of mine who was fighting from Penn State University, he was a tough. He wasn't that great of a boxer, but he was tough. He gets to the national finals, like this kid, this kid from Air Force was a multiple-time national champion. He was a southpaw. And I'll never forget Lou's interview on ESPN, and he was saying, Hal Bernstein always said to fight a southpaw, you got to move to your left and stand the other side. He goes, but I always move to my right. And he goes, Hal, I'm going to disagree with you on this one. He goes, I'm fighting my style. I'm going to move to my right. And the whole fight, you know, we're yelling at Lou, move to your left and use angles on this guy. He kept moving to his right. He kept running right in the guy's left hand. And eventually, he lost that fight. He got stopped in the third round because he made too many mistakes.
Well, I think, I mean, you're obviously right about it. That's always the potent, the patent, strategy against the left-hander. Durango's style, you know, to have his hands up like that and always charging forward like the announcers were talking about. You know, this is what he does. This is how he fights, you know. So Bailey should have known that and should have been prepared for that, should have trained for that. And it was like he was confused the whole time. He kept, like, pawing the jab, which was useless. The thing to do would have been to, you know, just keep your distance on a guy like that and starch the jab. Starch him in the face every time he comes in. Don't just paw at him and then try to find your right hand. Yeah, your right hand's your knockout punch, but you gotta soften this guy up and keep him at the right distance. So you don't just paw, you starch him with that jab. Hit him really hard in the nose. That would have been perfect, going right through the gloves and got him good, but he just kept pawing.
You're fighting a southpaw, okay? And imagine, Rich, and the way I always explain it to people, when people, you know, are not, they haven't sparred a whole lot, or they haven't fought a whole lot, or if they've never fought, and they're talking about, you know, using their chat, I actually stand in front of a mirror, because that's basically what a southpaw is, a mirror image. Your left hand is your lead hand, your left hand is your foot, your right hand, so it's almost like that mirror image. So if you both throw a jab at the same time, what happens? Your jabs will hit each other, and it's hard to land your jab. That's why you got to take a one step over to your left, get your foot on the outside, and even if your jab isn't as effective, that gives you an opening to throw your left hook. So a lot of times you'll see a very, very good fighter, and I'm going to give you a perfect example, is Bernard Hopkins. Bernard Hopkins was known as a southpaw killer for years. I mean, he whipped guys like John David Jackson, he whipped guys like Holmes, he whipped guys like Richard Allen. I mean, he whipped a lot of these guys in, and basically what he did was, when he knew he was fighting a southpaw, that he couldn't use his jab as effectively because of the mirror image. He uses a superior footwork, he positioned himself on the outside of their position foot with his lead foot, and instead of using as much of a jab, he used more of a lead hook and then followed up with the right hand, and he couldn't miss.
Right. Well, one of the best fights I've ever seen in a long time, that I think I mentioned to you when I was talking about the Bailey fight, was Robert Stieglitz versus Caroline Balzai. And this was a fight that we didn't get to see on the U.S. channels because it was overseas, of course, but it brings up what I said earlier about the low left hand. I mean, European fighters typically fight the right, they're supposed to, with your hands up. You know, they don't do any of that flashy shit, but, you know, moving around like Roy Jones Jr. and keeping one hand low. And they just don't do it. They fight orthodox, you'd say. And the fight between Stieglitz and Balzai was just unbelievably mirror image of each other until the knockout came in the 11th round. And you could see that Stieglitz had the bigger heart and the more endurance. And these guys were fighting each other. I mean, they're literally left hooks and right hooks landing at the same time. Exactly. Like mirror images of each other. Both hands up all the time. And Stieglitz just had the better strategy. And Balzai didn't have enough experience. He was undefeated at 21-0 up to this match. But Stieglitz just weathered the storm. He's got a couple KO losses. But I guess when it goes to distance, the more experienced guy. He's got 22 knockouts of his own and 36 wins, so he's got a little bit more experience under his belt, and he proved it. And it was one of the most technical fights, which surprised me why I wanted to watch it. It was on the place I usually get the MMA videos from. And so I'm starting to watch it, and I had just seen the Bailey fight. And I actually watched so much boxing this week because there was so much on there. I watched some fights down in across from the Staples Center. I forget what it was called, but it was on the 27th of August. I watched those today, a couple of those. There's some good fights, mostly undercard fights they show. But I watched a lot of boxing, and that was a match actually from a few weeks ago, the Stieglitz fight. But just perfect illustration of how you folks are supposed to fight us up on that fight. If you get a chance to watch that, Tony, it's a good one. That was 8/22, August 22nd this year. There's not too much fights coming up, but there's some interesting fights coming up, I'll tell you this weekend. Ray Mercer is fighting this weekend, did you know that?
Yeah.
Ray Mercer. Guess where he's fighting?
New York or who?
Where? Guess where?
Zimbabwe.
Guess further north. No, close. Very close. Sweden. Where they love the old heavyweight champions. I think Riddick Bowe last fought there. But, I don't know. Somebody that the Swedes love. The Swedish people. I guess. Technical term. But anyway, there's a whole bunch of other bigger fights than that. I just wanted to mention it off the cuff. And I did want to get to the boxer who filed the suit against Don King recently. I'll give you three guesses on that one.
Rich, I'm drawing a blank, but I read it.
Ricardo Mayorga.
Yes, right, I saw that.
So Don King, his son's company, what's going on, called the kill here. He says, they haven't set him up with a fight, he wants to fight. And the quote from his attorney is, our client is being held in a state of professional limbo. I don't think he accounts for his age. He says he's wasting what would be potentially the most profitable years of his career, which I don't know if I agree with.
Oh, what I read today,
unknown whack job with no financial history of success. not. So I hope that doesn't affect his performance in, you know, the future, because it seems like, you know, he is stuck to the hip with this top rank contract that Floyd was bad mouthing him for. The same was the reason why he doesn't want to fight him. You know, I think Floyd genuinely cares about the guy as a fellow boxer in some ways, and he wants to see him get better treatment and pay. But, you know, from what Floyd said, man, he only gets like 26% from Bob Arum. And to have a 90-10 split offered to you and not take it, that to me tells me there's some extracurricular activity going on there. Some threats or something have been made to keep him in his contract. And that's not good for boxing.
No, not at all. Let's talk about boxer real quick. This young fighter out of Philadelphia, who, let's say, I had talked in that he could, 7 or 8 years, and now they like the young up and coming kid, campus athlete, was probably the most natural person that I've ever been in the ring with for a first timer. And, it's good to see him get back into it. And, I wish him the best.
It's funny, some guy named Tappy.
So don't worry, concern yourself, you know, my bad
one. Alright, well, the Friday night fights this week are up at the Casino Rama. They have a bunch of blocks on this card. But at the top is a 12-round super flyweight fight between Jose Lopez and Marvin Sonsona. Jose is 39-7 with 32 knockouts and 2 draws. And I haven't lost in a while. And Sonsona is 13-0 with 12 knockouts. All of his wins, but one by knockout, which is pretty remarkable for a guy who's just coming up. You know, it's one thing to, you know, have 10-round fights and have a lot of knockouts, but to be having 4- and 6-round fights with a small window as a super flyweight to knock a guy out—that's pretty impressive. So that's probably why he's getting a big step up for the WBO super flyweight title in that fight. And it's going to be a good 10-rounder heavyweight fight too between. How to pronounce this, Brugors, I guess. The first Z is silent. It's a weird first name. Kielsa is 10-0 with 5 knockouts. He's fighting Kevin Monty, 17-6 with 13 knockouts, 1 draw. And then, hell of a record here, fighting Steve Molliner, 29-1 with 11 knockouts. We have a super bantamweight fight here between Molliner and Feliciano Dario Azuaga. The death. Let's get this. 76-50 with 64 knockouts.
Wow.
2 draws. I would be scared of that guy if I was one. At my weight, and he's been me. Damn, that's a great record. 64 KOs. He last lost in 2008 to a guy who's 22-1. Same. Almost. Molitor's got 7 more wins. So we'll see. But, it looks like he's only lost to guys with 1 or 2 losses, what I'm looking at right here. Recently, anyways. Undefeated guys, a couple undefeated guys he lost to. Lost to one guy who was 7-5-1. That was the only bum that beat him. That's a nice rank, too. You don't see that too often. 76 we go to Sweden, like I said, for Ray Mercer's on the undercard. And this could be the mismatch of the week, I think. Never mind Tim Sylvia versus Ray Mercer. MMA. Ray Mercer fighting a four-round heavyweight fight. He's 36-7, one draw, 26 knockouts. He's fighting Andreas Gustafsson, who's 2-0. Big 2-0. Watch out, Ray Mercer. He's going to get beat up. Anyway, there's two 6x2 heavyweight, one heavyweight and one welterweight fights in the main event card here. Alfred Cole versus Timur Ibragimov, heavyweight.
Right. Alfred Cole is still fighting, my goodness.
Only in Sweden. Only in Sweden.
he was world champ while I was just in high school.
Oh, there's another Rocky Jersey question. How old was Rocky when Jersey Joe first started fighting?
How old was Rocky when Jersey Joe started fighting?
Oh, 0-16 and from Sweden, looked even better. He had 3 minute rounds. Going in there fighting the guy who's lost every 2 minute round. But getting back to three rounders in the United Kingdom on Friday to Middlesbrough, Yorkshire, for an interesting matchup for the Commonwealth British Empire featherweight title. In the main event, John Simpson, 19-6, with 7 knockouts, versus Paul Truscott, 13-1, with 1 knockout. And a couple interesting undercard fights. There's a guy, 1-1, fighting a guy who's 22-83. Look at that. 83 losses. Let's see. We go to Twin River, Rhode Island, and our good buddy from the Rocky Marciano Foundation is going to be at this fight tomorrow. It's a Jimmy Birchfield fight. Former guest was at a couple weeks ago. Last week, I'm sorry. Right? What do you think? Joe McCready at 10-3, single middleweight, fighting Eddie Caminero, 5-2. Demetrius Andre is fighting a 6-round light middleweight fight. He's 6-0 with 5 knockouts. He's fighting John Williams, 3-0, 2 knockouts. And it'll be really that impressive on the undercard. A couple 3-0, 2-0 guys. We go to, where did we go to? The Bolivian heavyweight title on Saturday between Saul Farah, 39-11 with 31 knockouts, versus David Gutierrez, who's 9-0 with 3 knockouts. It's a tough fight for the Bolivian heavyweight title.
Know it.
Turn for a bet on Gutierrez must be pretty good. Let's see. Watch some Saturday night. Of course, there's always, you know, the big cards down in south of the border. We got a huge card in Panama, actually. At the Arena Roberto Duran in Panama City. Another Concepcion was fighting Devin. I swear, like, last week or the week before, we had, like, 2 Concepcions on the same card.
Yeah, they're both fighting for titles. I think they're brothers.
Yeah, this is another Concepcion. Luis Concepcion.
Oh, that's like Smith, you know?
And it's a 12-round flyweight fight for the interim WBA World Flyweight title. And Luis is 17-1 with 12 knockouts. He's fighting Omar Salado, who's 21-1 with 2 draws and 12 knockouts. And Daniel Ponce de Leon is fighting another 12-round featherweight fight, 37-2, 31 knockouts. Fighting Roynette Caballero, 27-8 with 19 knockouts. And this is a huge card. These people are going to get spoiled with their boxing. You might want to fly down to Panama. Nilson Julio Tapia is fighting an 11-round like middleweight fight with Austin Trout, 19-0 with 13 knockouts. Never heard of an 11-round fight, but apparently that's what they're doing now. And then we have a female fight, 10x2 minimum weight, Anna Fernandez, 10-4 versus Ibet Zamora Silva, 5-2, and that's been an interim WBA female minimum weight title. And we're going to get intercontinental on this with the next title. WBA intercontinental super flyweight title is on the line in a 9-round super flyweight fight between Ricardo Nunez and Timur Shalizov. Nunez is 15-1, 13 knockouts, and Shalizov is 16-2 with 3 knockouts. Looks like the little knockout artist versus the little decision man. And we got a 9-0 guy versus a 12-1 guy, 11-3 versus a 13-6. This is a stacked card. There's not a mismatch on here. Heavyweight, super bantamweight, light welterweight, Fernando Angulo, 22-5 with 14 knockouts versus Amit Diaz, 25-9 with 19 knockouts. And a little mess of group fights. I see there is one mismatch. There's a 7-0 guy versus a 1-3 guy. Take that back. Everything else is easily matched. There's like 50 fights there. It's pretty good. Why ain't that on TV?
Yeah, other than that, I mean, there's not a whole lot going on this
week. It's
the holiday weekend. I don't know.
Not
looking at
that
out of the fights on.
Send me down for the call. Yeah, the only other fight that stands out here is over in France. They have a card. 10-round super middleweight fight. Jean Paul Mendy, 25-0, 13 knockouts, and one draw, versus Nathan King, 12-13. So, the money's on Mendy. He's from France, so I think that's a given. And King only has one knockout. So, the clinch is champion. And on the undercard, a little better fight. Bantamweight 8-rounder versus Rafael Torrado, 24-6 with 16 knockouts. Arnold is 23 with 12 knockouts. Gregory Tony, 11-0 with 9 knockouts versus Edgar Calmers, 2018 with 11 knockouts. That's a heavyweight. And a couple light heavyweight 6-rounders between Najib Mohammadi, 19-0 with 9 knockouts versus Thierry Carl, 22-4 with 14 knockouts. And Kareem Benama, 17-13 with 4 knockouts versus David Grutter.
Congratulations. You did play.
That's it. That's your boxing for this week. So unless you speak Spanish and have access to Channel South of the Border, have you seen anything on TV? Actually, north of the border, too, because you have the first one we mentioned is Canada. Casino Rama. Well, interesting stuff, other than the upcoming fights. I don't know if you saw it, but one of the other things you're going to see in addition to the ton of boxing this week was the first edition of the 24/7 for Juan Manuel and Floyd. Apparently Floyd is laughing off these suggestions that he's having trouble with the IRS. And he likes to, of course, show off his stuff, so he's showing off his 1,000 square foot closet. Wouldn't that be nice? 1,000 square foot. I feel like he needed like a ladder to get to the top of the shelf. It's crazy. And it's like all mahogany wood. And I was like, what the hell? And then, you know, they show him out on the streets beating homeless people. I'm like, why don't you just set up cops in there? Bring him in and outfit him. Give him a bag of food. there were some interesting shots of his mansion. And then, of course, they had to have a shot of his alibi for that incident, and he's not a suspect. He's there with his daughter, so of course we can't suspect that he was actually standing next to the guy who fired the shot, like the guy says. So, I don't know what's going to happen with that. The bigger, more interesting thing of the show was, I think, the whole thing between Roger and Floyd Sr. So, kind of interesting. And then to have Floyd say about Roger, you know, if he touched her, that's wrong. If she touched him, that's wrong.
Hey, one thing, because I was actually watching a few friends of mine, and I had said something about, you know, Roger possibly being in trouble before that. I said, I don't know how it's going to affect, you know, this fight. I said, because if Roger gets, you know, investigated and say he gets charges pending, and Nevada decides to, like, suspend him, which they said during the show that it will not impact, you know, his participation in this fight. But I said, just imagine if it did, and, you know, his beat up Floyd Sr., saying he made him lose. And I said, well, it's two good pay-per-view fight. You got the Mayweather brothers fighting each other on pay-per-view.
Well, I think it's funny, the whole thing where they brought up this Grand Rapids newspaper article, and Floyd Sr. is holding the bag going, oh, I didn't say that.
Yeah,
I didn't say that stuff. You know, they just quoted me. And he's like really making a campaign on camera. You notice that? It's like, you know, and I guess their relationship, Floyd and him, Floyd Jr. and him, is so good now that he doesn't care. He's brushing it off.
Right.
You know, he seems like really intent on letting Roger know that. But, you know, I think what happened was, you know, Floyd had talked about how, you know, his father came out to Las Vegas and didn't feel good on one of the conference calls, and then he flew back to Michigan and felt better. And this was, you know, right around the time where the news came out that they were getting, you know, their issues taken care of and out of the way. And I think when Floyd Sr. was back home without anybody standing over his shoulder on the interview, he probably let some things slip that he shouldn't have.
Oh, for sure. What's you know, I say it just every week. So, Floyd Sr. and Rod, I think Floyd Jr. is very intelligent. I really do. So, and he plays the bad guy, but I think he does it. I honestly, in my heart, I don't think he's that bad of a guy. I know Dr. Cox was down with the 96 Olympic team, and he didn't have really anything. He said the guy that would cause the most trouble on that team was Nate Jones, and somebody else were really, you know, a little bit controversial. And he said Floyd was rather well-shaped. And I think Floyd uses his bad guy persona to try to make more money, attract more pay-per-view buys. But I really and honestly think that Floyd Sr. and Roger are two bad people. I mean, I think they're, first of all, they're both very poorly spoken. So, and I think they're both, you know, wannabe, you know, egotistical, maniacal, rotten human beings.
I don't know. It seems like from, I don't know too much about either one of them. I've seen
when Roger was a fighter, he punched Lee Duma.
They could both have bad reputations, you know, as far as their attitude and, you know, the whole flaunting of money with Floyd Jr. You know, it's just, it's not your ideal role model, either one of them, but it seems to me, just from watching this 24/7 episode anyway, that the fact that they have their issues out of the way makes them so much more relaxed when they're in their interviews, you know, like so much more soft-spoken about each other, obviously, and just about everything. It seems like there's like a complete change in the both of them, except for that little fiasco with the press article that Floyd's obviously lying about, I think, Floyd Sr. You know, it seems like that's really helped the both of them, you know, because Floyd Jr., you know, obviously respects his father. His father taught him to box, and, you know, so it's good to hear that encouragement from that person in your life, you know. So I think that helped him out a lot, made him feel better about himself, you know. And the father, too, that he's just being acknowledged by the son. Because, you know, from what I heard, their feud, you know, the father would show up somewhere, Floyd would leave. You know, they didn't want to look at each other. So just the fact that not only are they, you know, around each other all the time, and the father is seeing what the son is doing, but he's also able to step in and give advice and, you know, say that he looks good and, you know, give him praise. I mean, that's huge for the both of them, I think. And I wouldn't be surprised if Floyd tries more to be that role model type of guy from here on out and try to shed that image of the bad boy. Unless he goes to wrestling, like that's the latest rumor that's out there. He wants to be a wrestler.
He was on Raw the other week, you know, doing the guest host of Monday Night Raw, and, you know, he slipped the brass knuckles of somebody to knock out the Big Show that we wrestled a couple years ago to knock out his tag team partner. Big Show was all mad. And, but Floyd could be, in the pro wrestling ranks. I mean, he's not really big enough to be an everyday pro wrestler. You'd be good, like, you know, one or two time attraction.
Right.
But,
well, he was just on the show again. He was just on Raw again. That was big news on the blog, anyway. And, you know, there was stuff out after that that said he wanted to be a wrestler. judging from, you know, the amount of money wrestlers get and the lack of risk of losing your pound for pound or undefeated status, I think that would be perfect for Floyd. And he's got a big mouth.
Yeah.
You know, I think if he gets back in the ring against Juan Manuel and looks like he's never seen him before and gets, you know, within four rounds gets a nice knockout, he'll change his mind. He won't ever think about wrestling again. But I think there's a big possibility that he'll do it because there's so little risk. You know, he wants to kind of retire anyway. What better way to, you know, get motivated to stay in shape but not risk anything than to go over to wrestling? You know, he would be a great bad boy, too, of course, as we know. But I don't know whether he'll come through with it. I only saw one article about it. But as far as mixed martial arts goes, we do have a few fights this weekend. About 10 on the list here at Sure Dog. We have Fight Night in Costa Rica, Cariari, Costa Rica. We have the Shine Fight, American Top Team versus the World in Miami, Florida at the James M. Knight Center. VFC Night of Vengeance at the Renaissance Aruba Resort and Casino. Some exotic locales here for these fights this weekend. They must want everybody to take an exotic vacation on Labor Day to see the fights. This is in Aranjestad, Aruba. And then we have your neck of the woods, I don't know where Johnstown is, but in Johnstown, Pennsylvania. Okay. Well, you're going to miss the Cambria County War at the Memorial Arena for the Iron Will Fighting Championships. And then King of the Cage, of course, they do something every week. Northern Lights Casino in Walker, Minnesota. We got Turmoil going on. That's Saturday. From Night of Vengeance to Saturday, the Fight Night and Shine Fight. In South Korea, Karelia, Finland. That's the next one. But it's Karelia Fight 5. We go to St. Pete Times Forum in Tampa, Florida for Evolution XFC 9. Total Combat 35 in Ecatepec, Mexico. Also on Saturday in Missouri, Total Fighting 8 in Green Valley, Missouri. Whiskey Tango, Green Valley. That's awesome. Whiskey Tango. Must be a bar or something. Where it's at. And then we have a fight on Sunday. Where else but Tokyo? Gold's Gym, South Tokyo. Annex. It's called SWAT GX5. I'm just running through the list because it doesn't look like there's any real, you know, fight worth mentioning. It's going to be on TV. And probably not a lot of big names on those cards. But that's your mixed martial arts schedule. And there's not too much more on mixed martial arts news lately. Although, there was kind of big news. Fedor, his next opponent was picked over the last week. That's kind of big news. Brett Rogers, who's undefeated in Strikeforce, is going to be his next opponent. He's kind of an animal, that guy. So Fedor is going to have his work cut out for him. And they just had a kind of a joke exhibition match that I saw on MMA TV between Fedor and the guy that demolished Babalu Sobral in the last Strikeforce event. Gegard Mousasi was like in 8 seconds. They had a little less, it was almost like less than a sparring match, more grappling. And it looked like, it's funny, it looked like Mousasi had submitted Fedor at one point. And stuff. He got off him because he thought he tapped. But the referee didn't stop the fight. And then Fedor got him in an arm bar. And the ref stops the fight there. I was like, wait a second. Did anybody see that first tap? I think I was the only one who noticed it. But it kind of shows that that was all staged. Other than that, that's really it. Coming up on 10 here. I know we got plenty of time left here with the podcast. Now, are you getting any other news you want to talk about, Tony?
Well, I mean, there's folks coming up. You'll get a card next Friday with Verizon. Which I'm going to make it down to. And they keep Philip McCann on the card, which would be very interesting. You know, we talked about it. We're going to be here tonight. Let's just recap everybody. Recording. Young kid, I haven't seen him, and I'd say about a good 7 or 8 years at least. And when he was first starting to box, it had to be somewhere between 98 and 2000, because I was still at Mary Angus Rec Center. And they had this young kid in there. He was around a welterweight, junior middleweight, tall, thin kid. And he was, I guess, around, I don't even think he was 18 at the time. They were training him, and the trainer said, you know, he wants him to have his first sparring session in there with me, because Burkle being a tall, kind of thinner guy, he's going to be fighting a lot of shorter, aggressive type fighters, and they thought that would help him out, putting him in there with me. And then the other reason was they knew that I would, I'd work with him, you know, the fact that I was a bigger, heavier guy, I outweighed him by about 40 some pounds, and the fact that, you know, for experience, they knew I was, you know, try to, you know, hurt him or try to, you know, prove something, because there's really nothing to prove, you know, being a guy that's smaller and less experienced. Well, you know, what I did was, you know, I got in there with him, and we went, you know, a few rounds, light work, and I pulled him aside afterward, and I said, listen here, I said, I hope you decide to stick with the sport. I said, because I can't believe this was your first time sparring with anybody. And he smiled at me, and he was, really? I said, yes. I said, listen to me, young man. And I said, you have a tremendous natural talent. I said, you were relaxed in there. A lot of guys in their first bar session, myself included, were, I mean, a ball of nerves. I mean, jittery as hell. And I said, you should show if you are. And I said, you know, you were able to listen to what the coaches were telling you and make adjustments in good, mid-round. And, you know, he was really impressed by that. He had the stoppage win the amateurs over high-ranked player Mike Jones out of Philadelphia. He beat him in the Philadelphia Golden Gloves. And he had his, Phil had his pro career, stunted a few years ago by some out-of-the-ring problems with his family. And I remember hearing about it, and it was, you know, really upsetting, because he's such a nice guy and a true gentleman and a good role model for kids. And the fact that he's in the ring again is a great thing, and I hope I can get down there next week to see him.
Yeah. It's always good to see somebody like that. Kind of reminds me of a story I probably told you before, but it just comes back to me now, because I went to an event for Norwich. It was one of those alumni things where they send off the freshmen. They have a big dinner and ceremony. And I have a buddy of mine who's actually a development officer up there. It's a smooth title for a money broker. He comes around and begs for money for all the rich alumni. Nice job, he gets to travel the country. I mean, nice kid too. He was funny. When he was a cadet up there at Norwich, when I was in the military school part of it up there, he was one of those guys, he always hung out with the cool kids, you know, but he was like a spy. He would go up and he would do his thing and be what they call the tool half the time, and then he would blend over and become the buck private the rest of the time. And he was very good at changing, you know, being like a chameleon, just, you know, changing for the temperature and the climate, and just do whatever he had to do, and he was good at it. And he always had a good sense of humor, a nice kid. But anyway, he takes me down to this big event, and sure enough, ended up talking about boxing, and he brings up, well, everybody brings up when we talk about boxing in Norwich. I was really semester down at BMI. But, you know, those, the last year, my senior year, I got campus fights approved. So we made our own ring, and we had these campus fights. And big hit, and the guy that nobody would have ever expected to be that good his first time in the ring was this little rail of a kid. He must have been like a buck 30, and his name was Billy Ray Jackson. And he was from the Georgia section of Florida, you know, where the Georgia accent crosses over the border, right up on the panhandle there. And he had the worst accent for New Englanders, you know, because it stands out like a sore thumb. And he was just one of these kids that, he was just a weird dude. He showed up early while all the cadre, they call them upperclassmen, are learning, you know, how to take the freshmen in. And he just so happened to be in my company, you know, instead of like army. So they have companies, and we were Charlie Company, actually no, Indian Company at that time. We started off with Charlie Company. So he's one of the freshmen that I had to deal with. And that year I actually lost my rank, I think, because I had seen some other kid haze somebody, and so they busted me for what they call toleration of hazing. And I was like, whatever, you know. But I had this kid for so long, and it was just like, everybody knew who he was before he even started, because he was seen on this week with the cadre, like following everybody around and trying to get a hold of the book, to know everything in advance about what was going to happen, and like nobody knew who he was. And then all of a sudden, he's one of my freshmen. And, you know, he was just a funny character. Just unbelievable. But the way he fought would remind you of Jack Dempsey, you know, this little nerdy kid. And you'd see him in the ring and just be like, what the hell? And the one thing I kept thinking about was, you know, the first time I seen Jack Dempsey was ironically at a carnival. I think it was in Hershey Park, Pennsylvania, where they had one of those viewer things. You know, you look into it, you crank it like the old days. And there was Jack Dempsey in there with the pictures of him hitting the bag. And you wind the reel and it goes in fast motion. So I'm watching Jack Dempsey, how he used to bend back at the waist a lot. You notice in some of his fights? I think they showed some of his fights too. This kid could almost bend completely backwards and just avoid punches. He had this thing about him, he just swivel on his hips. And he would fight the most contentious fights you've ever seen. I mean, it was wicked sloppy, more sloppy than Rocky Marciano ever was. But it was effective. He always hit the win. Every time you put him in against somebody, it would be a show. Everybody wanted to see him fight. And I think it was the greatest thrill of his life. And I'm glad that I had to provide that for him, because he didn't seem like a kid that got too many moments like that. But every time anybody ever brings up the boxing fights that we put on, they always, where's Billy Ray Jackson? Whatever happened to him, I wonder. He would have been a good boxer if you get into it. But I never knew what happened to him after graduating. Billy Ray Jackson. But, there's so many people out there like that that just, you give them that chance to do something like that to prove how tough they are. An instinct kicks in. I think everybody deep down inside has that killer instinct to be a caveman.
Right? Yeah, right.
So you gotta fight for your food. You gotta take down that animal. You gotta be strong, and you wanna be able to have some hand to hand combat every now and then. Somebody's trying to take over your cage.
Oh, yeah, I pretty much out of everything, not a whole lot going on in the plate world this week, so.
A bunch of the Patriots cheerleaders who are doing a lot better than the Patriots right now.
Yeah, I mean, we were supposed to play the preseason game. They think the preseason night, you'll see more how important during the Super Bowl than you'll see more in other games when it comes to preseason games.
No, actually, they made it pretty tight. It's 27-24 now. They were down 21-0.
I mean, Eagles was lost 38-27, but like, final week of the preseason, that was a joke. I mean, the Eagles, they have a bad, they have Sean Jackson, no Westbrook, no entire starting offensive line,
yeah.
No entire starting defensive line. I am not too worried about this.
I think Belichick, though, he always takes it personal when he loses, even if it's in preseason. You know, so he always tries to win by a field goal.
Well, Eagles got their first game in 10 days on the 13th of September, and that's going to be part three of my three-part birthday party that weekend.
Oh, there you go.
So it's very interesting.
I haven't get to spar yet, but I did get back to the gym yesterday, so my comeback's coming along. I felt good. You know, I went through a full workout, and I did the same amount of sweating that I usually do in two workouts, so running and hitting the bag. But yesterday, I just, you know, got all bundled up and went up there and hit the bags. And I would have sparred, but my trainer came right from work, he said, so he didn't bring all the stuff. So it looks like next week sometime will be my next sparring match. But I feel pretty good. Hopefully I'll have some kind of amateur match to get started by October, I was saying. At the end of October would be my cutoff date for first fight. I want to get it over with by then. See where I'm at. But we'll see what happens. And I'll definitely do for another blog. So I'll keep
Yeah.
up about you know, how it's been so far. I was just thrilled more than anything today to be down to 190.
Yeah, right.
Break that. Yeah. There's so many days I've been like 1 pound or over 190. You know, and it's always like I know once I get to that, you know, destination there after the workout, it's only a matter of time before I have to, you know, I wake up at that weight.
Well, next week I got to start writing my preview article for Mayweather and Marquez.
You know, I was thinking today, for the first time, Marquez might be a good guy to bet on, you know, to see what might happen. But at the same time, then, you know what came into my mind? Mayweather 24/7 episode. The guy that Marquez is sparring, do you see what he's wearing? He's wearing like a button-up t-shirt with a collar, like a golf shirt. And I'm like, this can't be a guy that's anywhere near the caliber of Floyd Mayweather. So if you're not in with somebody super famous as a sparring partner, I don't know if I'd give you much of a chance to beat Floyd. Doesn't seem like he's taking a step up from that clip anyway. I don't know.
Well, I mean, the questions are all about Mayweather. I mean, I know Marquez is going to bring to the dance. He's a counterpuncher, he's the guy, he's a little bit of a slow starter. Like the three times he went down the first round in the first fight with Pacquiao, he got up, and a lot of people thought he won that fight. The last fight with Pacquiao, he was down, he was hurt, he got up, and people thought he won that fight. He weathered the storm against Juan Diaz and knocked him out cold. He tore Joel Castellano apart. So he sure is the better little dude than me. He's up in weight. And now a lot of the questions really are hinging on Floyd Mayweather. You got him nearly 20 months, 21 months of being out of the ring. That's one. So the always the contentious with the IRS. Then you have the contentious with the other Annabelle charges, you know, that you don't know how he's tied up in it. Then you have the battle between the father and the uncle. So there's always a lot of controversy,
but, you know, at the same time, I think he's used to that. He generates that naturally. He's one of those people who I think believes strongly in the principle of no publicity is bad publicity. And, you know, I think he's just, as long as he's working out every day, and that's not being affected, and he's doing his thing, and he's training as hard as he always does, I don't think he has much to worry about, but I think going into the fight, if he has the attitude like him when he was sitting down talking to his father and he was saying, I think I got to get the knockout, you know, like I have to prove something and knock him out. I don't think that's the right attitude going in, you know. You got to be confident, of course, but just, you know, saying that you have to get the knockout. I don't know. You know, with a guy like Marquez, you'd be lucky to survive 12 rounds.
Yeah.
You know, just concentrate on beating him every round. And then worry about the knockout.
We can't work against Mayweather in this fight. He's going to go out there and it's going to work in his favor. I'm not saying that it won't, but one thing that could occur is that he's going to want to go in there and be more impressive than Manny Pacquiao was.
Right.
He's going to want to beat Marquez more convincingly. And the fact is, he's going to leave himself up for a lot of openings.
Maybe. Flair is just way too defensive to for Marquez and his style to really do too much. But if he stays and hangs in there and Floyd shows that rust in the 10th or 11th round, that's where a bet on Marquez is going to pay off. I think the later rounds is going to be where that fight is determined. And Floyd might win every round up until then, you know, but that's what it's going to take for him to get sloppy and get caught. But if anybody can do it, you know, it's a guy like Marquez, and it's at this point with Floyd, you know, however he's distracted, he might be, you know, severely distracted for all we know, but, you know, it seems like there's always drama around him, so he's dealt with that kind of thing before, and he'll be ready no matter what. The thing is, you know, it's like, you know, what's he preparing himself for? It sounds like he's, you know, taking the bait of, you know, this is going to be a pushover fight. He thinks he's just going to knock the guy out. He has to knock the guy out.
Well, I think the other thing that Savage, which I think was a mistake, he took his fourth place from that place down to me with his unraged rib injury, which failed to stay packed with Sterling for time. But the one thing that Savage announced that this fight is going to be a mismatch, it's going to take the week when Floyd caught on Sherrod Gosh, which was a one-sided lead for Floyd. That one is crazy for him. So Floyd does win, and he wins aggressively, well, the season he came out and said the Marquez is not that good, just a club fighter, basically. And then if Floyd struggles a little bit, and he wins a close decision, or he uses, well, then Floyd must really be able to really slip, because he's just dominating this guy with the club fighter, and he's struggling or lost.
Well, the other thing is, like, you know, all the onus is on Marquez. Like I said, Floyd could always go to wrestling. He doesn't have to stay in boxing to make money. He's actually thinking he's doing boxing a favor by coming back, the way he thinks about it and what he says about it. So, I mean, to him, it would, of course, be devastating to lose, but it wouldn't be like, you know, the whole world is on the shoulders of Marquez, because his people are obviously, you know, it's on his Independence Day. Rise to the occasion. Timing is everything, they say. And he's going to go in there like he's a soldier going to war. So we'll see. We'll see.
Well, I think that pretty much does it for us, doesn't it?
Yep.
Okay, well, this is the Tornado. I'm signing out. Rich, I'm going to start on that preview article for you in a few days, and then we'll move on from there.
I did want to mention one other thing to get your perspective on this. We started with Rocky, we'll end with Rocky. Something that annoyed me the other day, I come across this thing about Lennox Lewis versus Rocky. Who would win? Yahoo answers. And this jackass writes this whole thing that gets accepted that Lennox Lewis would win. And I'm thinking, you know, why don't people put this shit in context when they say this? You know, because, like I said earlier, Rocky was 189, 185, you know, when I said I got down to Rocky weight. He was cruiserweight most of his fight.
Yeah, really?
Or less. So
if Rocky was fighting today, he would have been going to Mike Chilstone in New Orleans to have put him on like a lifting program to get him up to about 205 pounds.
Right. So people all the time they say that, you know, put these fantasy fights together and they don't account for the passage of time. If you're gonna take a time machine, go back and grab Rocky, bring him back to fight Mike, you're gonna have this time's rules. He's never going to fight at 189 against a guy who's 270 pounds. They're not going to let that happen. So, you know, the whole fact that you're putting these guys together at heavyweight just doesn't make sense.
Well, I mean, I've been on Yahoo Answers. I pretty much got off of it because the only time I'll ever get back on Yahoo Answers is if I want to promote something for the site. Like, say, when we did the Mitch Taz interview last year, I put a thing on there, hey, the scorer live, too. I would say, hey, if you have any questions for Mitch Paz, what would they be? And they'll say, he's going to be live on our show tonight at 8 o'clock. Here's the link. You can either ask the question for me, or you can live on live and ask the question then. Or if I write an article, Mayweather Marquez, I want to say, hey, everybody, Mayweather's going to play Marquez. Who do you think would win? And then I say, compare it to my article on Fighters Unlimited. And that's how I get us more viewers. Very smart.
All right, buddy. Well, we'll talk to you next week, and we'll have another fine guest on.
We'll discuss it then.
We're actually probably going to have guy who was staying last week, like dealing this week, a boxer. So we're going to have a boxer.
Okay. Sounds good.
Talk to you then.
All right. Talk to you then. This is the Tornado signing out.